WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
John Banville's novel, The Book of Evidence, takes place in the mind of a murderer. Freddie Montgomery is a scientist and cultured gentleman who prides himself on his love of beauty and his appreciation of language. But he gets into debt, steals a painting to get some cash, and murders a maid during the getaway. In prison, awaiting his trial, he requests a dictionary and writes a long, flowery confession, which is the novel. The Book of Evidence is John Banville's eighth novel. Banville lives in Dublin, and he's the literary editor of the Irish Times. I asked Banville to read part of Freddie's description of prison life.
I confess I had hopelessly romantic expectations of how things would be in here. Somehow I pictured myself a sort of celebrity, kept apart from the other prisoners in a special wing, where I would receive parties of grave, important people and hold forth to them about the great issues of the day, impressing the men and charming the ladies. What insight, they would cry, what breath! We were told you were a beast, cold-blooded, cruel, but now that we have seen you, have heard you, why... And there am I, striking an elegant pose, my ascetic profile lifted to the light in the barred window, fingering a scented handkerchief and faintly smirking, Jean-Jacques, the cultured killer.
Well, he really wants to be the cultured killer. Why did you choose as the character for your book someone who is very educated, very intelligent, very good with words, but a madman?
At one point I was going to use as an epigraph to the book that wonderful line from Nabokov's Lolita, where he says you can always...
For a fancy prose style, yes.
You can always depend on a murderer for a fancy prose style. But I was already worried that people would be too much reminded of Lolita, so I decided to leave that out. But I have a few nods of acknowledgement to Nabokov in the book anyway.
Well, that's one of my favorite lines from Lolita. You can always count on a murderer for fancy prose style. And I kept thinking about that reading your book. And, I mean, do you think it's true?
I somehow doubt it. I like the idea of my killer, Freddie Montgomery, seeing himself as something of a gentleman, very elegant, very poised. But, of course, the mask slips every now and then, and we see behind it a man trapped inside himself. I don't think that he's mad. In a way, I wish I did, but I really don't think that he's mad. I think he is crazed by what he has done, and I think he's crazed by a world that he dislikes intensely and finds difficult to manage, but I don't think he's clinically insane. I think that's what makes him more frightening than if he were mad.
A couple of your previous novels, one about, they're both about scientists, Kepler and Copernicus, and these novels are in part about the isolation and loneliness of genius, you know, of great men. Whereas your new book is kind of about the isolation and loneliness of a murderer.
I never thought of Copernicus and Kepler as great men when I was writing about them. I mean, I agree they are, but I never thought of them that way. They were obsessives, obsessed with what Wallace Stevens called the rage for order, to find some order to impose on a chaotic world. In that sense, the man in the Book of Evidence is very like them. He detests the world. He finds it a hideous place, very beautiful place, heartbreakingly beautiful, but the people keep getting in the way. and in a way, the person that he kills is someone who got in his way at precisely the wrong moment. She is the only character in the book who is not described, and he describes everybody else and everything else. I mean, Freddie can't pass by a stone on the road, but he has to try to make you feel what it looked like and how it felt to hold a stone. And he does the same with his people, but not the woman that he kills. She is she's anonymous. And it's at the end of the book that he comes to the realization that his real crime is not so much killing the woman. That's the one that he'd be put in jail for. But his real moral crime is a failure of imagination. the failure to imagine the woman vividly and strongly enough to make her be there so that he wouldn't be able to kill her, as we see throughout history. It's only when you dehumanize people and don't imagine them vividly enough, imagine their situation and imagine yourself in their situation, that you find it easy to kill. So Freddy, at the end, thinks that his task now is to imagine a life for this woman. He describes himself as being pregnant, living for two. But I think also what he doesn't remark on is the fact that what he has produced is a kind of act of atonement in producing a work of art. I mean, behind the book always there is the question of art and the question of how art can redeem things.
Because this confession, which your book is, it's his, the murderer's long confession, is really more like a novel in progress. Because he's constantly revising the characters in it, saying, she was tall and fat. Nope, she was short and skinny.
Yes, he certainly is producing a work of art. But this leads to, of course, to further ambiguities, because we say to ourselves, well, Freddy may be dreadful, and he may be a killer, and he may be all these things, but at least he's honest. At least he's telling us the unvarnished truth. Suddenly, we get the awful notion that he may have been lying. If he has lied at all, then it throws everything into doubt, and it makes him a far more evil character than he already is. Because, as I say, his one possibility of redemption is that he will be honest. He will be honest with the honesty of art.
You are the literary editor of the Irish Times, so I feel comfortable asking you this question. If you have a sense of where you fit in Irish literature, contemporary Irish literature.
Well, in a way, of course, everybody hopes that they're absolutely individual and that they don't fit in anywhere. If I were to say that I follow anyone, I suppose it would be Beckett. I was very pleased and honored to know that the last thing Beckett was reading before he died was the Book of Evidence. And I feel there's a sort of a symbolism in that's almost trite, but that I rather like, because I feel that I'm not comparing myself to him in stature. I'm simply, you know, answering your question about my place in the tradition, as it were. And I do like the notion of sort of the baton being handed on from Beckett to people like me. I don't really think that there is a tradition of the novel in Ireland. We had very great figures such as Joyce and Beckett, but there isn't a sort of tradition in the way that there is, for instance, in England, where the 19th century tradition is still going along quite strongly with people like Margaret Drabble and so on. That we don't have that in Ireland and never really had. So that people like myself who do work exclusively in the novel do feel themselves to be isolated. And in our better moments, we think of it as splendid isolation, you know.
Why do you think that that's true, that there hasn't been more of a literary tradition? Of course, the two people you mentioned, Joyce and Beckett, are people who really challenge the traditions of the novel anyways.
Well, I think one reason that there isn't a tradition in Ireland is that precisely because we had these enormously powerful figures. I mean, we had Shaw, Yeats, Oscar Wilde, Joyce, Beckett, and, you know, the list is very long indeed. And they intimidate us. I mean, they stand behind us like Easter Island statues, you know, this huge, shadowy, father-like, stony figure standing behind us. And we find it hard to get around them.
As the literary editor for the Irish Times, I imagine you have to assign who's going to review which books.
Yes, I do.
It strikes me that would be a really hard job in Ireland because it's such a small country. I figure most writers know each other. And it might be really difficult to find a writer who's not already friends or enemies with the writer of the novel about to be reviewed.
Yes, it's a very delicate position indeed. What I do for the most part is I try to send Irish books abroad, try to get people from Britain or from America to review them, so that there won't be this internecine warfare. But that's not always possible. One simply has to know who is friends with whom and who's, even more important, who's enemies with whom, and just hope for the best. But it is a delicate task, yes.
When the Book of Evidence came out in Ireland, in the Irish newspapers, was the book reviewed by writers from England and America instead of Ireland?
No, I did a very clever thing. I sent it to an academic friend of mine whom I knew would write a review that would be practically impenetrable so that people wouldn't know whether he was for it or against it. And it worked. It worked. So I felt justified.
I can't believe, though, that you let yourself assign who was going to review your own book.
Well, I mean, who else was going to do it?
You get a substitute to fill in for you.
Oh, no. Good Lord, no.
Really?
No.
You don't think that's a conflict of interest?
Yes, I suppose it is, yes. But people trusted me to do the right thing, and I did.
So did the person like the book or not? Could you tell?
I think he did, but it was really hard to tell. Anyway, it was a small review.
Well, John Banville, thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Banville's new novel is called The Book of Evidence.